Graphic Audio. A movie in your mind.
Graphic Audio presents Elmer Kelton's Sons of Texas series. Performed by Terrence Aselford, Tony Nahm, Eric Messner, Drew Copus, Daniel Stevens, Thomas Keegan, Michael John Casey, Joseph Thornhill, Casey Platt, Christopher Sheeran, Michael Glenn, Joe Brack, Yasmin Toison, David Coyne, Dylan Lynch, Ken Jackson, Tim Carlin, Bobby Aselford, Ren Casey, M.B. Van Dorn, Richard Rowan, Nanette Savard, Nick DePinto, Patrick Stratton, Barbara Pinellini, and Elizabeth Jernigan. Sons of Texas number 3, The Rebels, Part 1. His boots sinking deeply into the freshly turned earth, Andrew Lewis reached the end of the row. The muscular old work animal sometimes required a fair amount of coaxing to start pulling the wooden plow, but the slightest hint would bring him to a stop. Balancing the plow handle against his leg, Andrew took off his floppy, sweat-stained hat and rubbed the sleeve of a homespun cotton shirt across his forehead. Spring had brought the heat early. He'd never completely become used to the fact that spring came earlier here in Texas than it did back in Tennessee. He looked around for the black dog that had spent much of the morning trotting alongside the plow, watching for mice or rabbits that occasionally popped up, startled. He thought the dog might be off seeking mischief, a trait in which it was discouragingly talented, but he saw it dozing in the shade of a rail fence that kept cattle out of the field. Were the dog not an eager protector of the children, Andrew would long since have tried to give it to some passing stranger. As he had done regularly for most of a month, he let his gaze run expectantly over the trail that came westward from the town of San Felipe de Austin.
Damn it, it's still way too early to be looking for them. They're probably not halfway here yet from the old state.
Late rains had delayed his starting, and it was high time the corn seed was in the ground. Planted too early, and it was likely to freeze. Planted too late, and it might be caught by a long summer dry spell. Farming had never been an easy life anywhere, but it seemed sometimes the Texas weather had a special grudge against the plowman. Andrew turned slowly, looking across the expanse of land he claimed for his own. At 28, he already owned more hectares here in Mexican Texas than the acres he might reasonably have expected to put together in a long lifetime back in Tennessee. The government in Mexico had been generous to its American settlers, and he felt grateful. He had done well, especially in the 4 years since he'd married Petra Moreno. She had given him a reason to work, to build, to grow. He looked across the field toward his log cabin, where smoke curled from a tall stone chimney. It promised him a good dinner later, when the sun rose to midday and his shadow lay close to his feet. He had lived in that cabin alone his first several years here. He had added a second section after his marriage to Petra. He saw her now, a distant, slender silhouette, standing in the open dog run that divided the two sections of the cabin. She probably wondered if something was wrong, that he had stopped the ox and the plow. He'd better start moving soon, or she'd come striding down to the field to be sure he wasn't sick or hurt. He waved to let her know he was all right. He didn't like the idea of her leaving the two young ones at the cabin alone for even that long. Texas was benevolent in many ways, but it harbored special hazards for children. Rattlesnakes, coral snakes, scorpions, and centipedes. There were bears and mountain lions as well, but they seldom ventured too close anymore. The ever-growing numbers of new immigrants to Stephen F. Austin's American colony had pushed those sorts of predators back farther and farther to the west. The axe and the plow were doing to them what the rifle alone probably never could.
Come on, Blue, we've lazed long enough. Wonder who that could be.
Two riders approached from the direction of his older brother Michael's farm. Andrew smiled at the sight of 8-year-old Mordecai Lewis, carrying a rifle across his saddle longer than the boy was tall. Little Mordecai was making a start toward becoming a spitting image of his lanky father, who sat on the other horse.
Where y'all going with all that artillery? You already got your corn planting done?
The gaunt Michael pointed his chin westward toward the heavy forests that lay along the river and beyond, where no one had yet settled.
We're getting
that
almighty tired eating hogs. We're fixing to see if we can scare up some venison, or maybe even a bear.
It was like Michael to leave the planting unfinished and go traipsing off into the woods, forgetting everything but the hunt. Andrew was glad Michael was taking little Mordecai, for the boy would give him reason to come home in a timely manner. Alone, Michael sometimes would stay out for days, even weeks, roaming, searching for God knew what, listening to calling voices that Andrew had never heard. Chances were that little Mordecai would turn out just like him. He ought to be in school, but no schooling was to be had out here so far from San Felipe, except that which his mother gave him from her small collection of books, and his father gave him in the field and the woods. Somehow the work seemed to get done in spite of Michael's restlessness. Nobody had ever gone hungry in Michael Lewis's cabin. But Michael would never be as much a farmer as Andrew, and Andrew would never be the natural woodsman that Michael was.
How's Marie and the youngins?
Oh, they're fine. Marie said she might come over this evening and set a spell with Petra. Ain't likely that me and Mordecai will be back before dark.
Yeah, Petra'll be tickled to have her.
Marie was French and Spanish out of the old Louisiana town of Natchitoches. She usually fetched along samples of her cooking when she came visiting. It differed in some ways from Petra's East Texas Mexican. And both women had learned a lot of American dishes. Between the two of them, there was always something good to eat.
If you can take the time, I'll walk up to the cabin with you and drink a little of Petra's coffee.
Nah, I expect we'll be getting on. Morning's half spent already. You ain't seen any sign of them, have you?
Nah, no use wasting your time looking. Can't even know for sure that they've left Tennessee yet.
They left. They're kin of ours, so they'd have been itching to leave as soon as the snow melted. They have to come rolling in just about any day now.
Yeah, maybe. They might run into some trouble along the way.
Ain't no trouble ever stopped to Lewis when his mind was set, and mine's set on a little hunting. You ready, Mordecai?
The boy nodded enthusiastically. He carried his late grandfather's given name and already had much of his grandfather's look. It was an old family story that when the first Mordecai Lewis had been 6 months old, he'd crawled out of his crib and taken hold of a rifle. It was certain that from the time he became big enough to carry one, a rifle was never far from his reach. Mordecai, the father of Andrew and Michael, had been the first Lewis to come west into Texas back before 1816. It had been Spanish then, and Americans were unwelcome, fatally unwelcome. Mordecai died in Texas, a Spanish officer's bullet in his brain. Much had happened in Texas in the 14 years since. It was a different country now. Mexico had shaken off the Spanish imperial yoke, winning its independence on the battlefield, much as the United States had won its freedom from England. In an effort to settle Texas and put a buffer between itself and hostile Indian tribes, Mexico had welcomed Stephen F. Austin and other impresarios who brought American colonists into the thinly populated land. She had granted them freedom she did not even allow her own people down in the interior of Mexico. She had been generous with her lands to those who would live on them and make them fruitful. It had been a mercurial, often changing government, however. From the beginning, there had been those in the Mexican hierarchy who counseled for caution. There had been those who declared Americans to be an inquisitive and grasping people, unworthy of trust. They said that when Americans became too numerous, they were likely to want more and more land, until at last they took it all. Stephen Austin had often felt compelled to travel the long, hard road to Mexico City to plead the colonists' case, to pledge their loyalty, and to vouch for their gratitude. There had been worrisome stirrings. Back in 1825, Andrew and Michael had helped Austin and Mexican troops put down a short-lived, overblown rebellion by certain land seekers at Nacogdoches, who had declared themselves the Independent Republic of Fredonia. Many would have considered it laughable in its pretensions and its futility, but lawmakers in Mexico City had not laughed. Those who distrusted Americans had pointed to it as an ominous forerunner of things to come. Life had remained peaceful here on the Colorado River, west of San Felipe, headquarters of Austin's colony. Seldom did Andrew think about the Fredonian Rebellion anymore. His mind and his efforts were directed toward developing his farm, enlarging his fields, increasing his little bunch of meat hogs running free in the woods, and expanding his modest herd of cattle. Lately, he'd been thinking about other Lewises, his kin, on their way here from Tennessee. They would find Texas different from the settled land of their birth. It was big and mostly undeveloped, a wilderness except for scattered clusters of settlements. They would probably think his Mexican wife Petra talked funny, as did Michael's wife Marie, but they would come to love both women when they got to know them. They would come to love this land as Andrew and Michael had learned to love it. Once they knew Texas, they would never want to leave. After a time, Andrew saw Petra come out into the dog run and signal him to come back to the house for dinner. He glanced up at the noon sun for confirmation, then unhooked the plow and left it standing in the row while he walked the blue ox to the pen to feed upon last summer's grass hay until it was time to go back to the field. The dog paced impatiently back and forth.
Go on.
The dog left him and trotted toward the cabin, willfully scattering the multicolored chickens that Petra treasured above all except family and cabin. Petra waited in the dog run and up-tilted her chin for Andrew to kiss her. More than 4 years of marriage had not diminished that welcome ritual.
Mwah.
She looked at him with eyes big and black and happy.
You were hungry?
I could eat the south end of a mule.
Today we eat pork instead.
Petra had learned a fair amount of English, though she sometimes used the wrong word, or put it in the wrong place, or mispronounced it. His Spanish fell short of perfect, so he couldn't fault her English. What mattered was that they understood each other in either language. Everybody else would just have to make the best of it. Because he felt like it, Andrew gave her a fierce and suggestive squeeze.
This is not the time. This is the middle of day.
I feel the same way come night.
Then wait for the night. The children are hungry.
Their oldest, 3 going on 4, played in the dog run with a pup Michael had brought him. The boy was named Ben, after Andrew and Michael's Uncle Benjamin back in Tennessee. In the kitchen was the youngest, a girl, Rose to Andrew, Rosa to Petra. She sat in the high chair Andrew had first built for Ben and munched on a piece of flatbread freshly baked from the hearth. Andrew felt fortunate that both children were healthy. That this isolated life could be hard on the little ones was painfully evidenced by a small grave above Michael and Marie's cabin.
I saw Michael and Mordecai. Why did they not come to the house?
Andrew explained their mission. Petra smiled at the news that Marie would be coming over in the evening. Though the two women lived hardly 2 miles apart, they had not seen one another in a week or more. Each had her own work to do, work enough to last from daylight until well after dark. Life in frontier Texas granted women even less leisure than the men. The field labor had made Andrew hungrier than he realized. He ate a considerable helping of pork and finished the meal by using some of the flatbread to swab up cane molasses he had traded from a farmer down near San Felipe. The black dog sat in the doorway, forbidden to enter the cabin, though the pup was allowed. The dog had perfected a silent but plaintive form of begging. It usually worked better with Petra than with Andrew, who knew the dog had already made a good meal from a cottontail rabbit he'd caught in the field. The dog left its post at the door. Andrew glanced questioningly at Petra. It was too early for Michael to have returned. But travelers on the dim road between San Felipe and San Antonio de Bar often stopped at Andrew and Petra's cabin. Andrew pushed back from the table and walked out on the dog run, ready to invite a visitor to come into the table. He stopped short. The invitation stuck in his throat. An old animosity flared. He tried to suppress it and be civil to the two black-bearded men who sat on horseback in front of the cabin.
Howdy, Finnis. Howdy, Luke.
One-armed Finnis Blackwood seemed fatter every time Andrew saw him. It was no surprise, because his greatest exertion was in rushing to the dinner table.
Good day to you, Andrew. See you've been busy plowing.
Yeah, you've been plowing.
Luke, broad and muscular, had always been a little slow in his thinking. Mostly he did whatever his older brother told him to and took as gospel anything Finnis said. For whatever he had been shorted in brains, Luke made up in meanness. Finnis sicked him onto his enemies the way he would sick a dog. There had been a time Andrew would have met him with a rifle, but that was futile. When the Blackwoods looked for trouble, they never came in the open as now. They sneaked in from behind when nobody was looking. That had been their style when they and the Lewises had grown up as reluctant neighbors back in Tennessee. It was still their way.
Me and Luke, we've been hunting for a milk cow straight off. She was a springing heavy with calf. We figure she's had it somewheres by now and is hiding out. Big brindle cow she is. We was wondering if by chance you seen her.
It was Andrew's opinion, which he kept to himself, that the cow's rightful owner had come along and found her and taken her home. That is, if there had been a cow in the first place. It was strongly probable that the Blackwoods had been hog hunting in the woods and had decided to come over for a free meal. That was ironic, because it was probably Andrew's hogs they were hunting. His pig crop always weaned smaller than it should. He had long suspected that a percentage of his hogs ended up in the Blackwood smokehouse.
Yeah, I haven't seen any such cow. We was just finishing up our dinner. Long as you're here, you'd just as well come on in and have what's left.
We ain't come to impose.
They tied their horses to a post in the sun. Andrew would have tied them in the shade of a tree just a few steps farther away, but the Blackwoods had their own ways, and he felt no compulsion to try to educate them to higher standards. Petra was painfully civil to the two brothers while they finished everything she had cooked and looked around for more.
How is Nellie?
Fatter than a hog. I declare I never did see anybody who loved to eat like she does.
Finnis gave Petra a condescending look that said he'd as soon not talk with her at all. She was Mexican. Petra seemed to understand the look, and Andrew suspected she continued the conversation just to aggravate Finnis. That was not difficult to do.
And the three children, how do they do?
Noisy. Hungry all the time.
Nellie had been shelling out children at the rate of one a year, a trait admirable in cows, but not always so desirable in women. Fathering babies was the only kind of planting in which Finnis found any pleasure. Hard work around the Blackwood farm was left mostly to younger brother Isaac, the only one of the three Andrew considered worth the powder it would take to dispatch them to a better world. Even Isaac would bear watching, for he was a Blackwood. Finnis and Luke finished, not so much that they had eaten all they wanted, but that they had eaten all there was. The two children held their distance. The little girl was always timid around strangers. The boy, Ben, was more sociable, but he distrusted these dirty-bearded, unkempt neighbors from across the river. Andrew took that as a sign of his son's good judgment. He followed Finnis and Luke outside, not so much to bid them goodbye as to be sure they didn't pick up something and carry it away. The necessities were hard to come by in the isolation of colonial Texas. He didn't want any of them stolen.
That wife of yours is a fair to middling cook, Andrew, even if she is a Mexican. I wish Nellie could take some lessons from her. But there's one thing bothers me about you being married to a Mexican. The days are coming when us Americans is fixing to have to fight them. When that day comes, Andrew, I'm wondering which side you'll be on. Ours or theirs?
I don't see it coming to that, but if it ever does, I'll be on mine.
He watched the Blackwoods ride west, skirting along the river. Their farm was on the other side and some miles to the east. Not until the two brothers were out of sight did he return to his field.
Yeah.
They remained on his mind after he set the blue ox back to pulling the plow. He had long wished for the Blackwoods to fail on their farm and move somewhere else, to be someone else's worry. Were it not for Isaac Blackwood's stubborn diligence, it would have happened long ago. Without Isaac to carry the load, Finnis and Luke would not remain long. Andrew became so absorbed in his work and his thoughts about the Blackwoods that he didn't see the other two horsemen who arrived on the faint trail which led from San Antonio de Bar, capital of the Mexican state of Texas.
Andrew! Andrew! We have visitors!
Whoa! Whoa, boy! Whoa!
He left the ox standing in the field, picked up his rifle that leaned against the pole fence, and trotted anxiously toward the cabin. He saw two strange horses in the corral, three counting a sleek brown colt. The saddles on the fence were of a Mexican style rather than American. As he walked up to the dog run, he saw a thin, dark-skinned man of 40 or so years standing there, white teeth shining, his smile broad and friendly.
Alessandro!
¿Qué pasa?
You're a long ways from home.
They gripped each other's arms in the abrazo, the Mexican manner of greeting between two old friends.
It's been a long winter since I've seen you. I saw two horses in the corral.
My son Manuel came with me. You saw the colt.
I did.
We have brought it for Michael's oldest.
Oh, Mordecai will be pleased.
The colt is not much in return for the many favors you Luises have done for me and mine. When your boy is a bit older, I shall bring him a colt also for the good American milk cow you brought me last fall.
Ah, the cow is a gift.
So is this colt. And the next one.
Manuel, 11, seemed to have grown half a foot taller since Andrew had seen him in Bar the previous fall. He was a handsome youth, thin, dark-skinned like his father, his eyes large and brown and full of life. He had the look of the outdoorsman about him, though Andrew knew his mother made him attend the church school and brooked no excuses that might let him stay out where he would rather be, with the cattle and horses. Manuel stood up quickly as his father and Andrew entered the room. He bowed slightly with the good manners of his people, then shook Andrew's hand with a vigor he had learned from his association with Americano frontiersmen like the Lewises. Little Ben had already made friends with Manuel. Rose, barely two and shy around strangers, remained in a corner. She watched Manuel with misgivings.
A wonderful family you have, Andrew.
We may not be through yet.
Petra blushed, which made him wonder. She was not pregnant so far as he knew, though no one could accuse him of not trying.
You have worked enough for the day, Andrew. Take time now for a visit with our friend.
Andrew nodded. The same thought had come to him.
I left the ox in the field. Would you like to come with me, Alessandro, while I bring him up and turn him loose?
But of course.
Walking away, Andrew looked back to see the two boys on the dog run where Ben was petting his pup. Manuel was making a show of admiring the awkward little animal that had a hard time moving around without falling over its own feet.
That's a fine boy you have, Alessandro. Is he going to be a soldier like you were?
No. I came to hate the life of a soldier. I have no wish to see Manuel be a soldier ever. Better than he become a good farmer and feed people instead of killing them.
They brought the blue ox to the shed, where Andrew put out a little hay and opened the gate so the animal would be free to go to the river for water and then drift away to graze. The ox never strayed far. He knew where the feed was. Back in the cabin, the two men were sitting at the table and drinking the coffee the Lewises saved for company and special occasions.
Hey, what's the news in Bar?
That is troublesome news from Mexico City, my friend. You know there have always been those there who have distrusted you Americans. Do you remember the General Miri Terán, who was in Texas last year?
I heard of him.
He did not like what he saw. He said visiting the American colonies was like visiting the United States. He found nothing of Mexico in them. He said the Americans are winning Texas without a battle, and the central government should take steps. Now it has. Drastic steps.
What kind of steps?
It has ordered a stop to all further immigration by Americans. Only those who have their proper land papers or proper passport can enter Texas.
What about the ones that are already on their way?
They will be stopped unless they bring the papers.
We have relatives coming from Tennessee. Austin promised that they could have land next to ours.
Did he send them the papers?
No, they were to get those when they arrive.
Then it is too late. Unless they somehow miss the soldiers, they will be turned back. They will never reach here.
Oh, this is a hell of a damned thing. We were promised papers.
Promised by Austin, not by Mexico City. I wish there were something I could do for you. If I was still in the army I could do things, or I could overlook things.
I dread seeing Michael when he hears this. He'll bust a gut.
Petra came up behind him and placed her hands gently on Andrew's shoulder.
Perhaps they will miss the soldiers.
They can't. We wrote them to travel the main trail to Nacogdoches.
Oh, I'm sorry, Andrew. I know how much you and Michael wanted them here.
Maybe there is something I can do. I'll ride to San Felipe tonight and get Austin to make out the papers in the morning. I'll go then to Nacogdoches and take the trail east toward Louisiana. With luck, maybe I can find them before the soldiers do.
It will be a long, hard trip. And it may be for nothing.
That's the only answer I can see. The plan has to wait, Kirita. I gotta go and see if I can help my kin.
Michael will be here tonight. Wait and talk with him.
Oh, you know Michael and his restless ways. If I'll wait, he'll go instead of me. And once he's gone, Lord knows how far he'll ride or when he'll find his way back home. But if I'm gone, he'll have to stay here and look after things.
I wish I could go with you. I still know many of the military in Nacogdoches. If one speaks to the right officers, anything is possible. But I have Manuel with me.
Manuel could stay here with us.
If he would be no imposition.
He would have a good time with Ben and Mordecai, and they could learn much from him.
Well, then it's settled. Fix us something to take along, Petra. I'll go fetch up my horse.
The United States lay most of a day behind them. They had crossed the two canvas-covered wagons over the Sabine River shortly after dawn, the rising sun at their backs. They were many miles into Texas now, and James Lewis was not sure he could see a big difference from the Louisiana side. Texas did not appear to have many people in it, at least not this part along the trail that meandered through the dense shade of tall pine trees and the formidable cane brakes that at times seemed to extend for miles. The wagon ruts had been cut deeply through years of passage by heavy, iron-rimmed wheels, moving westward toward Nacogdoches in Texas, or eastward toward its sister town Natchitoches in Louisiana. More headed westward than eastward, James would judge by the stories he had heard. People who went into Texas usually stayed. Certainly his two older brothers had. Now James was going to join them, and the excitement tingled within him again the way it had the day he and the others had set out from their old home in Tennessee.
Texas.
The word had a ring to it, a sparkle, a magic that conjured up all manner of exotic images, even if so far the country looked the same as much of the land they'd already passed through. It was the name that made the difference. Riding a long-legged bay horse named Walker, James Lewis was a tall, thin, wiry man, crowding 21. He eagerly studied this new Texas with the restless, searching blue eyes that had run in the Lewis strain from as far back as the oldest could remember. Though James recalled little of his father, his mother had told him he had the same strong jaw, the same lean and sturdy frame. James supposed it must be true, for he remembered that look in his older brothers. He remembered it especially in Michael, who, in a sense, had taken his father's place. Woodsman Mordecai Lewis had put a strong stamp on his sons. That stamp went beyond the look. After a youth spent meeting the challenge of the fields and forests in Tennessee, James felt he was unlikely to encounter anything in Texas that he couldn't handle. Given a little helpful counsel by Michael and Andrew to set his feet firmly upon the ground. His older brothers had one advantage, nearly a decade of experience in Texas. But James thought his youth should make up the difference. By his reckoning, Michael must be 30 now and Andrew about 28. In Tennessee, that was regarded as almost middle-aged. He supposed people must wear out at about the same rate in Texas. He rode 50 yards in front of the lead wagon, watching for anything that might cause difficulty, such as a tree falling across the trail or a washout that might break a wheel. The Indians were in the back of his mind, but he had been told in Natchitoches that they were not likely to create trouble on this leg of the journey. The ones in eastern Texas were generally friendly. Folks had said it was renegade white men he should watch out for. Some, whose presence was greatly desired by the authorities in Louisiana and farther east, had found refuge in the redlands of eastern Texas, where the Mexican army force was small and mostly ineffective. Well, sir, they would be sorry if they came looking to prey upon these wagons. James held his long rifle across his saddle, ready for whatever might come. Folks back home claimed he was as good a shot as his brother Michael had been. He had kept the family table well supplied with meat after Michael left to go west. Though James had never been called upon to squeeze the trigger against a man, he did not doubt that he could do it. He wouldn't need the Mexican army to defend him and his. The Mexican army. That was the only thing which gave him pause about coming to Texas. It belonged to Mexico. That made it a foreign land, with laws different in some ways from those he had known. He had often wondered how Michael and Andrew had made the adjustment. In Michael's letters, which James suspected had been written for him by his Louisiana French and Spanish wife, Michael had assured him that this was no particular obstacle. American settlers far outnumbered those from the Mexican interior, and most local laws in the American colonies were patterned after ones familiar in the old states. In many ways, it would be as if James had never left home, except that most of his family had remained far behind him. But not all. He looked back at the lead wagon where his sister Annie drove the team of four big, strong mules that their Uncle Benjamin had selected from the best he owned. James never had understood why Annie wanted to come along, except perhaps that she thought she might find a better husband in Texas than the many prospects she had passed over in Tennessee. She was 22, well on the way to becoming an old maid by Tennessee standards. Most men considered her uncommonly handsome, and many a likely lad had come calling. The best James could figure, she had measured them all by the memory of her brother Michael. As a girl, she had idolized Michael, just as James had done. None of the young suitors cast a shadow as long as Michael's. Older sister Heather had married at 17, as a young lady properly should, and she had four children now, as a young married woman properly should. Naturally, she had not entertained any of this foolishness about going to Texas. But Annie had always been of an independent mind. You never could tell her anything she didn't want to hear. Following in the second wagon were Cousin Frank and his family, moving lock, stock, and barrel to Texas. Frank Lewis was the same age as Michael, 30 or thereabouts. To James, that seemed a little old to be setting out upon a new life. He was unsure of Frank's reason for leaving Tennessee, for Frank had just about everything there that a man could reasonably want, and he was by all odds the happiest natured of the Lewis clan. It was said of Frank Lewis that you could set him down in hell and he would find something to enjoy about the warm climate. James supposed Frank's restless, questing spirit had brought him here. Frank had been talking Texas for years, ever since Michael and Andrew had gone there. He talked Texas during his waking hours, and James suspected he dreamed about Texas when he slept. As Uncle Benjamin's oldest son, Frank stood to inherit a considerable amount of land back home someday. Nonetheless, Frank had said a man could amass far more land in Texas than he ever could in Tennessee. Frank called it ambition, but James suspected it was an adventuresome spirit, like Brother Michael's. As a young man, Michael had never been able to stay in one place long. James wondered sometimes how his brother had remained in Texas for most of 10 years. It would have been like him to have kept moving west until he came to mountains he couldn't climb or an ocean he couldn't swim. James's heartbeat quickened with excitement when he thought about finally seeing Michael again after all these years. Never had anyone had an older brother quite the cut of Michael. James looked back toward the sound. Annie hailed him, waving her arm. She could stick two fingers in her mouth and whistle like a man, and do it better than some he'd heard. Heather never would have done that. She had too much feminine dignity. But anything Annie saw a man do, she took as a challenge to go him one better. She was even wearing a man's hat now instead of the conventional woman's bonnet. To James, that one fact was a pretty good indicator of her nature. He rode back to the front wagon and turned the bay horse around, keeping the steady pace of Annie's mule team. Annie stared expectantly at him with big blue Lewis eyes, as if he should already know what she wanted.
What do you need, sis?
I was thinking you ought to be riding ahead and finding us a likely place to camp the night.
I don't want to still be traveling when dark catches up with us.
It was his place to decide when to start hunting a campsite. He'd done a pretty good job as outrider all the way from Tennessee. Their coming into Texas was no excuse for Annie to start thinking she had to take charge just because she was a year or so older.
There's plenty of daylight left.
Just don't you be crowding our luck.
James turned back and pulled up beside Frank Lewis's wagon. Frank was tall and rangy like all the Lewis men, like James himself. Being some 10 years older, he was starting to show the lines and furrows that came from mature responsibilities, work, and worry. Not that Frank ever acted like he worried much. As far back as James could remember, Frank had always liked to tell stories and laugh and slap his knee. He, almost alone among the Lewis men, seemed always to have a book somewhere within reach. He had a box full of them in the wagon. Just about anything in the world interested him. He could tell you the histories of foreign kings and queens. He could tell you what made the lightning flash and the thunder roll. At least, he claimed to know from the books he had read. That didn't keep him from being a good farmer and a middling hand with a hunting rifle, though not as good as Michael had been. Michael. Like Annie, James always seemed to be holding men up to compare them with Michael, and they never measured quite so tall, not even close kin. One thing about Michael, though, he had never smiled much. Not like the next oldest brother, Andrew. Cousin Frank, now, he could be provoked to a smile over the least little thing, a toad frog hopping across the road, or the way a mule cocked its ear over crooked. Some people back home had mistakenly thought he never took anything seriously. But Frank was serious about his family. His wife Hope, his two small boys who rode horseback behind the wagons, pushing along three extra horses and a pair of milk cows. Hope would be needing those milk cows because anybody with half an eye could see that she was showing. In 3 months, maybe four, there'd be another little Lewis. Frank had been anxious about their getting to the Austin colony in Texas and putting their cabin up before that event took place. A wagon was no place to birth a baby. Hope Lewis sat beside her husband on the wagon seat. She wore a respectable cloth bonnet and a plain gray homespun cotton dress, practical for traveling like this because it didn't show the dirt too much, and there was no way to keep clean on a long trail.
You getting tired, Hope?
I'm doing fine.
Hope had never been one to indulge in complaint or to tell her husband or James what they ought to do next. She accepted what life sent her and acted as if it was exactly what she had ordered. But James saw fatigue in her eyes. He knew Annie was right, though he would not admit that to her until some snowy day in July. He had better be finding them a stopping place pretty soon.
How about you, Frank?
If I grinned any bigger, my face would bust and fall off. You ever see a prettier country?
Looks about the same so far as Louisiana.
You're just going by what you see. I go by what I can feel, and I feel like this is a day we'll remember the rest of our lives. I just wish them people that dropped out behind us had stayed all the way to see it.
The Lewises had thrown in their lot with a considerable string of wagons when they left Tennessee, but one by one the other travelers had reached their destinations or turned away onto other trails. Since Natchitoches, there had been just these two wagons, just these Lewises, bound for a life in a new land. James knew Hope missed all that company, for she had made a lot of new friends among the other wagon people. So had Annie, for that matter. But in truth, James felt almost relieved that they were all to themselves now. It heightened his sense of responsibility, his sense of a challenge met and mastered. He had been but a 10-year-old boy when Michael and Andrew had left. He had to shoulder a lot of responsibilities that had been theirs. He was a man now, and this trip gave him a chance to demonstrate it. He felt that Michael would approve. Michael's approval was important to him. He dropped back a minute to check on Frank's two boys driving the loose stock and to marvel at the pair of rough wooden cages that held Hope's precious laying hens at the rear of the wagon. He had thought for sure that those hens would get out somewhere along the way and make a meal for the wolves. Frank's books and Hope's chickens. Quite a combination. He rode back to Annie's wagon.
How's Hope looking?
She looks fine to me. She could probably travel half a day yet.
James heeled the bay horse into an easy lope, putting the wagon behind him before Annie could offer any more advice. He slowed the animal as soon as he was safely out of earshot, for he had inherited a love of horses from his father. He would not push one to the point of exhaustion without a strong reason. Horses were valuable property here in Texas, people said. A man would be a fool to abuse one, especially one as willing and able as Walker. James had raised Walker from a colt out of Uncle Benjamin's stock, had broken and trained him under his uncle's wise teaching. There hadn't been a better horse within 20 miles, maybe 30. James had matched him in races several times against various horses, brought up, stolen probably, by the young Blackwood boys. They had never finished within a length and a half of Walker. The bay would have folks in Texas blinking their eyes, too.
Texas.
James could remember when the word had brought dread to the Lewis family, for his father Mordecai had been killed in Texas almost 15 years ago by Spanish soldiers who regarded him as an armed intruder. But conditions had changed by the time Michael and Andrew had moved to Texas nearly 10 years ago. Mexico had won independence from Spain and had opened the gates for immigration. Texas offered a start for the young, like himself, and a renewal for the older ones, like Cousin Frank. He was not sure what it offered Annie, probably not as much as she expected. He came after a mile or so to a clear-running creek. The gray ashes and cold, blackened remains of old campfires told him that many travelers had made camp here in the past. A good day's wagon journey from the Sabine, it seemed a likely place to pause for the night. Deadfall timber nearby offered plentiful firewood. He dismounted, tasted the water, and found it good. After letting the horse drink, he tied it and began dragging up dry branches, breaking them over his knee. He wadded several handfuls of moribund grass left from last year's growth and struck a fire into them with flint and steel, blowing the faint spark gently into a blaze and adding small chips of wood. By the time Annie and Frank pulled in with their wagons, he had a good fire going. An hour or more of sunlight was left, but an hour didn't mean much on a journey of this length. He watched Frank gently help Hope down from their wagon.
Easy, little mama. The two of you have traveled far enough for one day.
Annie surveyed the campsite, and James waited to hear her make some complaint about it.
Nice place you found, James. I'm proud of you.
I always find us a good place.
James unloaded the cooking vessels they would need to make supper. He had shot a young buck in the cool of dawn, so they had fresh meat. They had bought flour in Natchitoches, and corn they could grind for bread to save on the flour. They even had coffee, though they were careful to stretch it. There was just enough money for the real necessities. James was sure their journey to Texas had been much easier than the one Michael and Andrew made together a long time ago. He and Frank's boys watered the horses and mules, then staked them where they could graze on new spring grass. The older and more dominant of the two milk cows had a calf, so all they had to do was tie the calf to a tree. The cow would not wander far. The younger cow would stay close to the older one. Her udder was dry, but she was starting to show some, like Hope. James left the milking chore to Frank's oldest boy. Milking cows was one job James had never relished, though he had done it often enough. Hunting was more to his liking. A cow's teats fit his hands about as poorly as a plow handle.
Better hurry up, Edward. Smells like they've near got our supper ready.
Edward, hands already strong at 8, finished his milking and turned the calf loose to finish what was left. The red cow never let down all her milk until the calf was punching at her udder. It was her instinct to save some for her offspring. When she held back too much, Frank would turn the calf out with her for just a minute, then remove it to let Edward finish the milking. The smell of frying venison drew James to the campfire. He realized how hungry he was. When the venison was cooked, Annie poured off most of the grease and dropped corn dodgers into the skillet. Bubbling on a bed of red-hot coals was a pot of beans that had already served them for 2 days. A man could get almighty tired of beans, but they came in handy on the trail. A big, fresh pot cooked overnight could last for several days. All it needed was a little heating each time they made camp. They all bowed their heads while Hope gave thanks to the Lord for delivering them safely into Texas after such a long journey.
We hope you'll keep looking out for us, Lord. for we are thy loyal servants, a-traveling through a savage wilderness. Look with favor upon these youngins here, and the youngins soon to come. Protect us, if thou will, from any who would come a-wanting to do us harm. Amen.
Amen.
James noted that his bay horse and a couple of the mules were staring fixedly toward the west, their ears pointed. He turned, searching. He saw a dozen or so horsemen moving in their direction on the trail.
Hope, maybe you better say the last part of that prayer over again.
He went to the wagon wheel where he had leaned his rifle. He raised it up and cradled it across his left arm. As the riders neared, he saw that they were soldiers. Their uniforms were the worse for wear and dusty from traveling, but the man in the lead bore himself with the dignity James had always associated with lieutenants and captains and such. He didn't remember that he had ever seen anyone higher in rank than that. His father had served with Andrew Jackson once, long before James's time, but all James knew about that was the stories he had heard in the family. He couldn't picture Mordecai Lewis in a uniform. He had most often worn buckskins. The men were brown-faced, like some he had seen in Natchitoches. This was part of Mexico, so these must be Mexican soldiers, he reasoned. At least they were not the white renegades he had been warned about. But Spanish soldiers had shot his father a long time ago, probably not far from here. He didn't know how much difference there might be between Spanish and Mexican, so he kept the grip on his rifle. He was reassured when Cousin Frank stepped up beside him. Frank had a rifle too, but he carried it at arm's length, presenting no overt threat to the riders. Frank's genial countenance had fooled some people back home into believing they could crowd him as much as they wanted and never have to pay the fiddler. Frank's fighting streak was well hidden behind his smile, but that smile could turn cold just before lightning struck.
What do you reckon they want with us?
Nothing I can think of. They couldn't have known we were here till they seen us. Was I you, I'd lower that rifle and let them know we're friendly.
I ain't friendly till I know what their intentions are.
Lower it.
James had always been taught to defer to age. He eased the rifle down.
I'd like to know first that they're friendly.
It's their country.
Ours too now.
The riders crossed the creek. The soldiers spread out, reining up in a half-moon configuration around the little camp. The leader looked first at James, then at Frank. His black eyes revealed no friendliness.
Who is in command here?
Nobody is, exactly. We all just do our part.
You are the only men here?
We're all there is. Two men, two women, two boys. Welcome to our camp.
Where do you think you are going?
We're going to Nacogdoches, then on down to a place called San Felipe in Stephen Austin's colony.
You have the papers, then? Papers from the Esteban Austin?
We got a letter from my brother saying Austin is holding some land for us.
But nothing from the Austin himself?
Just that letter is all.
Then by the new federal law which has come to us from Mexico City, you have no right to be here. No more Americans are allowed into Tejas if they do not have already the papers from the Austin himself. You are under arrest.
I've never been under arrest in my life. I ain't fixing to start now.
You'll get used to it, friend. Happens a lot in this country.
A youngish American-looking man in buckskin sat slouched on a dun horse behind the soldiers. James had not noticed him before. The man's face had not felt a razor in many days. It was brown, but the color came from sun, not from Mexican blood. He wore a crooked grin that indicated he was taking a certain perverse pleasure from all of this.
You don't look like one of these soldiers.
The young man pushed his horse forward, stopping abreast of the soldier in charge.
You could say that Sergeant Diaz has made me his guest, if you wanted to put the best face on it.
He is under arrest! You are all under arrest!
One of the soldiers swung down from his horse and reached out for Frank's rifle. Frank reluctantly gave it up. As the soldier reached for James's rifle, James stepped back, bringing the weapon up in both hands. Several more soldiers swiftly drew swords. James saw the threat in their eyes and felt his heartbeat quicken, but he did not give up the rifle. The American stepped down lazily from his dun horse. He still had that crooked smile, but the humor had faded from it.
I never was swift with figures, but I could always count up to 12, and that's how many soldiers there is, friend. If I was you, I'd give up before they hurt you.
We came a long ways to get here.
My brother's letter said he had everything fixed up for us. We got it right.
You're in Mexico, friend. And in Mexico, it's the man with the rifles who tells you what rights you've got. If you won't give that gun to one of them, then give it to me. But be quick. Sergeant Diaz there, he's got no patience with Americans.
James backed up another step.
Nobody's taking my...
He saw the fist coming, but he was too late to dodge it. It struck him squarely on the chin, snapping his head back. He felt the rifle jerked from him as he staggered, and then went down on his hands and knees. Streaks of lightning flashed in his eyes. Pain lanced from his chin up through his head and back down his neck. He would have sunk flat onto his stomach had Cousin Frank's strong hands not grabbed and held him.
Here's a rifle, Sergeant. The boy's just headstrong and don't understand the situation.
He is arrogant. Like all you Americanos. But he is not in your country now. He is in mine.
What do you figure on doing with us, Sergeant? My wife here, she's in a delicate condition, as you can see.
I will escort you back to the Sabine River and see that you cross it.
That's a whole day's trip. My wife is awful tired.
The sergeant gave Hope a moment's sympathetic study.
We will camp here tonight. We'll take you tomorrow. There are other guns...
One more in each wagon.
James saw Annie hand over the rifle she carried beneath her wagon seat. Frank fetched his second one, holding it with his hand away from the trigger guard to demonstrate that he had no intention of using it. It was probably not loaded anyway.
No one will leave this camp tonight.
To James, that seemed a needless statement. With a dozen soldiers camped beside them, they weren't going to sneak two wagons, eight mules, the extra horses, and two milk cows out of here. The American knelt and gingerly touched James's chin.
I didn't go to hurt you, friend.
Sure didn't feel like you meant to do me any good. And don't call me friend.
I meant you nothing but good. Another minute and they'd have gutted you like a catfish.
But we've got a right.
East of the Sabine, you've got rights. Over here, Diaz holds all the cards. And he's got a hard feeling towards Americans. If you don't want to lose your health awful sudden, you better be playing the game by his rules. Come on now. Let me help you up off the ground.
I can get up myself.
All right, so you've got a sore chin, but you're still breathing. Ain't my fault you got caught.
Seems to me like if they wasn't escorting you back to Louisiana, they wouldn't have come across us.
You was going to Nacogdoches, wasn't you?
To register, like my brother said, before we set off down to Austin's colony.
Then it wouldn't have made any difference. They'd have turned you back when you got to Nacogdoches.
Nobody in Louisiana told us there was new law.
They probably ain't heard it yet. Seems like the government in Mexico City taking a bad case of the itch about so many Americans settling in Texas. After all, it ain't been long since the Mexicans took their country away from Spain. Now they're afraid the Americans might take Texas away from Mexico the same way. So they passed a law to stop any more from coming in. A letter from your brother don't mean a damn thing to Diaz.
It meant several hundred miles in a wagon to us.
There's good land to be had in Louisiana.
We didn't come for Louisiana, we came for Texas. And one way or another, we'll get to where we're headed.
I wouldn't let Diaz hear you say so.
James's stomach roiled in anger and frustration, and he still felt unsteady on his feet. He seated himself on a wagon tongue and watched resentfully as the Mexican soldiers unsaddled their horses. Hell of a thing this was, to travel so far and then be escorted back to Louisiana like criminals. Annie had been studying the American with more curiosity than James thought was proper.
I don't believe we've heard your name.
Diaz has got a name for me, but it's in Spanish. You don't want to hear it. My mother named me Daniel. Daniel Shipman. Over home, they just call me Sly.
Sly? How'd you come by a name like that?
Well, because folks say I'm pretty good at what I do.
And what do you do?
I'm a merchant, you might say. I take American goods over into Texas, and I trade for Texas goods to take back and sell in Louisiana.
What you're saying is that you're a smuggler.
I never did like that word myself. Truth is, I do the folks a service. There's people on one side of the river got goods that people on the other side would like to buy or swap for. But there's overfed lawyers 1,000 miles away saying they mustn't do it. Now, show me in the Bible where it says I can't go around a mud hole when I find one in the road. I simplify people's lives, is all.
Folks call you Sly. You wasn't sly enough not to get caught.
This time. But it's been close to 2 years since the last time they caught me. I've been over here 20, 30 times since and never let them even see my tracks. I wouldn't have got caught this time if a jealous competitor hadn't turned me in.
How'd it happen?
I'd taken several mule loads of goods to some of my Cherokee Indian friends up above Nacogdoches. There's a trader over yonder who'd rob the Indians if it wasn't for me. He fetched Diaz and the soldiers. They confiscated my mules and throwed me in the Nacogdoches jailhouse.
Mighty expensive for you, wasn't it?
Not bad. The Cherokees stole the mules back from the soldiers. They'll keep them for me. I've always tried to make friends wherever I go. It's a Christian thing to do. And anyhow, it's good for business.
You ain't made a friend of Sergeant Diaz.
Diaz is a good man, after his own lights. You can bribe most of these soldiers and they'll let you go, but Diaz is an honest man. Got a ramrod for a spine so that there ain't no bending him, and he ain't got much use for Americans.
If he hates us so much, how come he talks pretty good American?
He lived in Louisiana a while. The way I heard it, his family had to run from the Spaniards because of their politics, and American renegades made life mighty hard for them on the other side of the river. Soured him against us all.
It ain't fair to judge everybody by a few.
We all do it, don't we? I bet you've already laid a mark against all Mexicans because of Diaz.
What? That's not...
Suddenly, James had to reconsider. He had always been made uncomfortable by people who forced him to back off and take a look at himself. They made him see things he would as soon have overlooked.
We were fixing to have our supper, Mr. Shipman. We'd be tickled to share with you. Invite Sergeant Diaz, too. Maybe he'll feel a little better towards us.
He mightn't take it kindly, ma'am. He'd figure you was trying to bribe him. He'd still put you across the Sabine tomorrow. Was I you, I'd save my venison. But me, I'd be much obliged to join you and your husband.
I have no husband. This hothead young man is just my brother.
Just her brother, like that didn't mean much. James grimaced. He'd like to have seen Annie get this far without him along. If it had been up to him, she would still be at home in Tennessee.
Well now, ma'am, I must say that comes as a surprise to me. I'd have figured a handsome young woman like you to already have herself a husband. Must be a lot of blind men back where you all come from.
Annie smiled like the sun had just come up.
I believe you have the advantage of me, ma'am. You know my name, but I don't know yours.
I'm Annie Lewis. This is my brother James and my cousin Frank and his wife Hope. And those are their boys Edward and David. We were on our way to join our brothers Michael and Andrew down in Austin's colony.
Michael Lewis. That name's got something familiar about it. Would he be the Michael Lewis that married old man Villaray's daughter from over in Nacogdoches?
The same. We stopped for a day and got acquainted with the Villarays. Do you know Michael?
No, but old man Villaray taught me most of what I know about my business. He was in it himself for a long time. And what he didn't teach me, old Eli Pleasant did. I've heard Eli speak of Michael Lewis. They was good friends.
Eli visited us in Tennessee.
I still miss that old reprobate. He was killed by some renegade, you know, down in Austin's colony. Him and me, we used to make trips together, trading goods. Wasn't nobody slicker when it come to going around the authorities. Made no difference to Eli if they was on the Mexico side or the other one. He forgot more than most of us will ever know.
If he was here, maybe he could figure some way to help us get out of this mess. We didn't come this far to just turn around and go back to Tennessee.
While he was teaching you so much about smuggling, I don't suppose he taught you a way to go around our problem.
Maybe he did, but things are a little close in this camp. You don't know how many ears are listening. We'll talk about it on the other side of the river.
I've got my family here. I wouldn't want to do anything that'd put them in danger.
Friend, you've taken them into danger as soon as you left home.